I would say to you, say to all your listeners, that, you know, having valid soil samples in place for the year is very important. Having enough soil samples to cover your area where you're spreading fertilizer, and getting a fertilizer plan done by an advisor or whoever may do it for the farmer out there, so that you can stand over and say, yes, this is the real limits that I'm allowed on the farm for the year.
Hello, I'm Kieran Lynch, and welcome to OVCast, the Chagas Sheep Podcast. Each episode, we'll bring you less insights, advice, and technical updates for the sheep industry. This week's episode, I'm joined by environmental specialist Tim Hyde to discuss the importance of knowing our fertiliser limits on farms. We discuss how the introduction of the fertiliser register has put purchased fertiliser more in the spotlight in farms. Tim explains the implications of this, how farmers can work out their stocking rate, and what the limits are. We discuss the importance of soil sampling, how that can impact the fertiliser limit, and the importance of getting the fertiliser plan done. We finish up discussing how some changes in slurry spreading and the use of less technology on farms are in place this season, and all the changes are coming down the tracks. We start off with a little bit of context around the current situation. With the introduction of fertiliser register last year, there's a little bit more focus on fertiliser usage on farms. Let's just put that in context. It's important, I suppose, we need to stay on the right side of that, because what we use on farms is now being recorded from the merchant right the way through. So farmers need to be kind of aware of what they're purchasing this spring.
And yes, you've highlighted there the fertiliser register. It's a new way for farmers and merchants and the department to kind of get used to, that all the fertiliser that's been bought is now being recorded. What's moving between farm to farm has also been recorded. Maybe some farmers might be buying in bulk and selling it on. And you've merchants, for the smaller or bigger merchants, are all now recording fertiliser. And the start of it came in last year. And there was you had to register for the fertiliser database, and there's still somewhere around 5,000 to 6,000 farmers that still haven't registered for it. So even if you're not using any fertiliser, you're still supposed to have registered for the database. And in September last year, farmers had to declare their closing stocks. So last year was the kind of start, but it came in at the end of the year. This year is the full year recording of the fertiliser database. And that's driven an awful lot of questions at farm level for farmers going to buy fertiliser, for farmers asking what fertiliser can I use when they're going into the merchants or the co-op. Some of the co-ops are asking the same question. Do you know how much you can buy? Do you know what type of fertiliser you can buy? And that's pushing back onto advisors and farmers to kind of come up with a fertiliser plan of some sort for a year, to allow farmers to go away with confidence to say, well, I know I can buy X amount of this type of fertilizer and Y amount of that type of fertilizer. And that, you know, when this is all registered on the database, even if I do declare some closing stocks, I'm not going to push myself into any problems if I have an inspection from the Department of Agriculture in relation to my fertilizer usage for the year. So I think that, Kieran, that puts a bit of context on it, that, you know, it's important to know what you can buy, how much you can buy, what type of fertilizer you can buy, and that your co-op is happy to give you that. Some of the co-ops are, I think, a bit nervous about selling fertilizer to farmers over the counter, because they don't want to sell them the wrong type of fertilizer. And, you know, working out what amount of fertilizer you're allowed is very easy if you have soil samples. It takes a bit of work to get a fertilizer plan done, but at least if you have soil samples, you can prove, look, I have so many hectares or acres at P index 1, 2, 3s, or 4s, and I can get a fertilizer plan done up. And a fertilizer plan isn't that simple, in that it's, you know, you have to take into account what meal you fed last year, your grassland stocking rate that you had last year. But it is possible, and I would say to you, say to all your listeners, that, you know, fertilizer, having valid soil samples in place for the year is very important. Having enough soil samples to cover your area where you're spreading fertilizer, and getting a fertilizer plan done by an advisor or whoever may do it for the farmer out there, so that you can stand over and say, yes, this is the real limits that I'm allowed on the farm for the year. So I hope that answers your first question, Kieran.
No, I think you put a lot of context around there, and your last point is something I think we'll come back to a bit more as we go on. Look, as you say, the fertiliser register certainly has put more focus on it at farm level of merchants, and it's something that's been dealt with a lot more by advisors at the moment. But Tim, the rules governing fertiliser usage on farms haven't changed in So far as the nitrogen, the phosphorus limits on farms have been there beforehand. It's just they're more in focus. So maybe briefly, if you could just outline what they are, we might delve into them a bit more then.
Look, there's been a requirement for every farmer to have a fertilizer plan since 2006, since nitrates came in. So it's nearing on 20 years. The number of farmers that would have had a fertilizer plan every year wouldn't it would have been limited enough. So to get a fertilizer plan, look, we look at the hectares of land that people are declaring on their BIS form. So this time of year for declaring the land on BIS. Then the crops that are going into each of those fields. So some sheep farmers may have a bit of rough grazing, they may have a bit of hill, there may be lowland, there may be a bit of crops on the farm, there might be a bit of spring barley or something. And then depending on those crops and the stocking rate that you had last year, and we're going to talk about grassland stocking rate. So we can get to into that in a little bit more detail, but I'm not going to go into real detail on it because it takes a bit of working out. But your grassland stocking rate last year defines what fertilizer you're allowed on your grassland in this year. And the reason they use last year's grassland stocking rate is that it's easier to work out what your grassland stocking rate was last year, which is your grazing livestock, and every animal produces so much nitrogen per head, and we can go into the details of that. But when you work that out, you know at the end of the year, well, like at the start of this year, let's say, I know what my grassland stocking rate was last year, and then there's a table I work off to say, well, that's how much nitrogen and how much phosphate I'm allowed per hectare or per acre. The one thing I would say to you is that under the regulations, nitrogen, chemical bag nitrogen, bag P are covered by the regulations. There's no limit on potash. So people can use potash whatever way they want. And the reason there are regulations on how much fertilizer you can use is over the nitrates regulation. So we often think that nitrates regulations cover the higher stocked farmers, the derogation type dairy intensive beef farmers. They don't. They cover the nitrates regs, which includes nitrates and phosphates, cover every farmer in the country. And as part of those nitrates regulations, this fertilizer register, our fertilizer database that we talked about, has come in. And the requirement for farmers now to know what their stocking rates were last year so they can work out their fertilizer for this year. Kieran, you and I are both, sorry, you and I are both fairly well on the ground in relation to what's happening in our advisory offices. But I would say about 50% of advisors are getting this question on a daily basis from farmers over the last number of weeks, months, how much fertilizer can I buy? And we'll go back to our previous year's grassland stocking rate and work it into our fertilizer plan.
I was just going
Okay.
to say, I think you're just right, Tim. I think there's probably a misconception out there that we assume it's only derogation farmers that are caught up in all this. It's not, and that has changed a lot. Look, I'll just get you maybe to explain how you work out your stock rate for those that aren't familiar with it. And there will be, look, there won't be that many in the very high stock derogation levels, obviously, but it does apply to a broader swath of farmers out there. So how would they actually go about checking and seeing, well, what is my stock rate?
Okay. Well, look, Kieran, what I'm going to say from the start is it's easier for a bovine or a cattle farmer to work out their stocking rate because there is a department system there that tracks the cattle movements on a farm. And every animal, whether it be 0 to 1 year old, 1 to 2 year old, or over 2 year old, or a suckler cow or a dairy cow, they're all tracked on the AIM system. And in the department, in the ag food system, there is an NMP statement where they can get their bovine figures for last year. So it'll tell you what your total N produced on the farm from bovines were. It'll also tell you how many hectares you had. So I'll give you an example. Let's say the NMP statement said that from bovines you produced 10,000 kgs of N and you had 100 hectares. That's 100 kgs of N per hectare. And then we have the tables to work off. For sheep farmers, it's more challenging because even though there's a census done at the end of every year, sheep census, it doesn't work out those nitrogen figures for you. So I'm going to take a sheep-only farm as a quick example. If I had every ewe produces 13 kgs of N per head, every hogget, lowland hogget, produces 6. If I had a mountain ewe, it would be 7. If I had a mountain hogget, it would be 4. And if I had store lambs, it's 2.4. So those figures are available. So lowland ewe 13, lowland hogget 6, mountain ewe 7, mountain hogget 4, and store lambs 2.4. So let's say I had 100 euros and I had nothing else. So 100 by 13 would be 1300. And if I had 20 hectares, then my stocking rate will be 65. And it's worked out in kgs of N per hectare. The one thing you mentioned, Kieran, and it's very important that we get this across, that people often think that fertilizer is really only an issue for the higher stocked farmers. Unfortunately, the way the regulations are written, the pinch on fertilizer for phosphorus is very quick to happen for lowly stocked farmers. And I'll give you an example. If I didn't have soil samples on my farm and I was stocked at less than, I'm going to say 2.5 euros to the acre. I'm going to say to the acre because, or 6 euros to the hectare. I'm only allowed somewhere between 5 and 5.5 units of phosphorus per acre. So less than a bag of 18-6-12 per acre. And that's where the majority of the lower stocked farmers will get caught. If they're less than 85 kgs of N per hectare, they're only allowed less than a bag of 18-6-12 per acre. So it's the six, not the nitrogen is restrictive, it's the phosphorus. So, at that stocking rate, they'd be allowed about 70 units of nitrogen, but they're only allowed about 5.5 units per acre of P. And it's those lower stock farmers up to from zero stocking rate up to 85 kgs of N per hectare, and the ones from 85 up to 130, where you would think you're nearly doubling your stocking rate in some situation. Your nitrogen does go up accordingly, and most of those farmers would say, "Well, I'd have no problem living. Instead of being at 72 units of nitrogen, I may be now allowed up to nearly 90." But the phosphorus doesn't go up in the same percentage per se. Instead of being allowed 5.5 at the lower stocking rate, I'm only allowed 8 units of P per acre. And okay, well, we're just talking about bag inputs here. If you're using your own slurry, if you're using your own farm manure, that doesn't matter. But what happens on a lot of these lower farms, they're also importing organic manures from maybe their higher stock neighbors next door, and that needs to come off the figures that we've talked about. And it's very quick. What we find is that it's very quick for a lower stocked, whether it be dry stock or cattle or sheep farmer, to go over their phosphorus limits very quickly because the limits are quite low.
Like Tim, on the basis of what you just went through there, and we take a lot of the lower stock farmers, typically they might use a bit more compound, maybe they're not going in with as much nitrogen, maybe, but they're using a bit of compound during the year to keep the P and K levels up, or maybe topping up silage ground. You could hit that limit very, very quickly. So they really do need to talk to their advisor, their consultant, before they purchase this year.
100%, Kieran. That's the advice I would give. That's the advice I'm giving to my colleagues here in the office. We can't say that, okay, you'll be okay to buy a couple of ton of 18-6-12 or 10-10-20 or a bit of, whatever other compounds because you'll be okay for your nitrogen. It's the phosphorus that's going to catch them quicker than anything else. And of course, that's the middle one. When we say 18-6-12, it's the six part of it. The challenge will be, Kieran, is how does a farmer get in contact with an advisor or professional who might help them with their base to also do this for them? Because they're extremely busy. This is their busiest time of year at the moment. What I would say, Kieran, is I would encourage every farmer that doesn't have a soil sample, take a valid soil sample taken for, a soil sample normally covers 8 to 10 acres, roughly, If you don't have a valid soil sample for every 8 to 10 acres, that's in date, and that means taken since I think it's 15th of September 2020 is what's in my mind. They are valid still for this year. That you should be lining up to get those soil samples taken for the back end of this year. At least you can say with confidence then, this is why I'm allowed. Because without soil samples, your limits are very low.
That's what I was just going to ask you, Tim. Like, if you had your soil samples taken, and we say a farm with more even reasonably stock, maybe 110 kilos, you're under the 130 kilo limit, but still stocked fairly well, trying to push on with things. If the soil samples are there and they do show that there is index one and two soils, I suppose we should qualify that if they're not there, they're assumed to be index three in that category. But if they have the soil samples that show the need for it, how does that change the thing for them?
It changes hugely, Kieran, and that's why it's very important to get good quality and well taken soil samples at the right time of year. So 3 months after any chemical fertilizer has gone out, maybe up to 4 or 5 months if there's any organic fertilizer gone out in the form of slurry. But what it does is in that category that you mentioned there, let's say that's someone who'd be reasonably well stocked, instead of being allowed 8 units of P per acre, and you talked about, just to skip back a bit, you talked about P index 1, 2s, 3s. All soil samples will have an index. 1 is very low, 2 is low, 3 is it's where we want to be, and 4 is where you've excess nutrient in the ground and you wouldn't be putting on any more nutrients because from a water quality perspective they could be lost. But we were talking about their 8 units per acre for that farm you're talking about. That's where you have no soil samples, or it's been soil samples as P index 3. If you're a P index 1, which is low or very low, you're talking about doubling or maybe trebling your allowance. So that gives you an awful lot more scope to put out the compounds. And you are correctly saying that the majority of lower stock farmers would put out lower stock or would put out compounds, high NPK compounds, before they would put out maybe protected urea. It's kind of it's what we used to put out. We're still putting it out, and it's working well and they're maintaining soil fertility. So what I'd say to you is by having a good quality soil sample that will show you what the actual P result indexes are, you may be allowed a good bit more P than if you don't have soil samples.
Tim, just going forward, like there are other changes that are coming in, and we've touched on the stock price. We probably should have qualified a little bit better just the categories that over the 130, the 100 to 130. Like there is other measures coming in, such as the use of less fall slurry application. Do you maybe just touch on that a little bit for me? Like what's coming down the tracks for maybe this year and what's going to happen next year?
Okay, well, look, I'll touch first of all in relation to, you mentioned 130, which is a stocking rate for your previous year's grassland stocking rate. All these rules and regulations are all based on your previous year's grassland stocking rate. So what I'd say to you is that last year, a rule was introduced that if you were over 130 and if you had no soil sample on grassland, you were allowed no chemical P, no bag P. A second rule came in that if you'd any tillage land, regardless of your stocking rate, that wasn't allowed any chemical P. And that's a big one to get our heads around, considering that, traditionally there was often 10, 10, 20 or those type of fertilizers used on your spring barley crops going into the ground or. So the two rules are if you're over 130 without a soil sample, you're not allowed any chemical P or bag P. If you have any tillage land, regardless of your stocking rate, the same thing applies. Now, we haven't heard of this rule about no chemical P applying for a lower stocking rate than that going forward. So that's the rule as we know it at the moment. That's the rule we expect will continue. But with the bigger emphasis on water quality, and that we know that if nutrients are not put into the right place or if they're not spread at the right location or the right time, and you get losses and water quality deteriorates. There's nothing to say that that rule about having no chemical P or bag P allowed on farms may drop for other types of farmers that have stocking rate less than 100 or less than 130. The one thing you did ask me there, you mentioned low emissions. Low emissions slurry spreading, which is trailing shoe or injection. For this year, 2024, any farmer with a grazing or grassland stocking rate of 130 or greater have to use less this year. From the 1st of January 2025, if you're over 100 kgs of N from grazing livestock or grassland stocking rate, you have to use less. Just a clarity on that is that any farmer that might be taking in pig slurry has to use low emissions for all pig slurry since the 1st of January last year. So it's 130 this year, 100 next year, grassland stocking rate, you have to use less. There's going to be a large number of farmers who are over the 100 that have to use low emissions for either sheep slurry or cattle slurry.
Tim, I is going to see a bit of a change. Look, we've seen a lot of investment in that technology among contractors, among farmers. But the fact that that net is going to get wider, it's probably something that needs to be on the radar for more farmers out there.
Yeah, look, anybody who's reasonably well stocked would be hitting the 100 or 130 kgs of in per hectare, you know. If it was cheap, I think the 130 is met by 10 euros to the hectare, which is only 4 euros around. It's 4 euros to the acre. If you're talking the lower one, which still comes in 2026, which is 100 kgs, you know,
We're
it's
back. We're
the
back at about seven, so we are like
you're
something.
in around 7 euros to the hectare, which you know would probably be the average stocking rate on an awful lot of lowland sheep farms out there. So, you know, it's coming at us, and there's going to be more of it.
Look, if I take everything you've discussed and put in context, for the vast majority of farms out there, one of the investments we should put on the card through the back end of this year, or certainly next spring, if it's not already done, is getting site sampling and getting the nutrient management plan done up. Not only look, we could argue, we've discussed at length before about the benefits in terms of production and improving our soil fertility, but also in terms of compliance. Now, Tim, it's a sensible investment and something that needs to be considered.
100%, Kieran. And okay, we can talk about getting a simple fertilizer done, a fertilizer plan done, or a detailed one. You've mentioned about optimal soil fertility. Look, we all want to grow as much grass as we can, as cheap as we can, with the least amount of investment. As because you know, if we go back a couple of years, how the volatile prices of fertilizers, it could happen again. By taking good quality soil samples, and I'd say don't leave this taking soil samples till next February or March or April. Line up your soil sampler, whoever you do, whoever does them in the locality, take them next November, December. You'll have them back in time. There'll be enough time from the last spreading of fertilizer that any nutrients that were spread will have been dissipated, will have been taken up by the grass and gone out of the soil sample, and you'll get a better quality soil sample. And look, lime, we can't underemphasize liming. You know, if we get all our lime out and we get the pHs right, we might need a lot of this expensive fertilizer that we're buying. So that's why that would be my recommendation, Kieran, is line up your soil sampler and take enough soil samples for the back end of this year, November or December, and you'll go into 2025 with a full fertilizer plan if you haven't got one already, and you know exactly what fertilizer and the amount of fertilizer and type of fertilizer you can buy.
Tim, I appreciate that. Look, thanks for putting a bit of clarity around it.
Okay, thanks, Kieran.
We'll leave it there for this week's episode. I'd like to thank Tim again for coming on with us. He highlighted a number of times, if you're in any doubt at all, contact your advisor, your consultant. See what your limits are before you go purchasing fertilizer this year, if you are in any doubt. I think it's a good piece of advice, and he's highlighted a lot of caveats around where we stand at the moment. That's it for me. For updates from the Sheep Programme, keep an eye on our Twitter page at Chagas Sheep. I'm Kieran Lynch. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe and follow us for more episodes.